The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
This offseason quarterback drama, right? And Russell Wilson's gripes may have gotten a little lost in the shuffle, but he's cleaning it all up now. And we'll tell you how in moments. You'll also hear from Russ. Welcome to NFL Live, everyone. We got a packed show for you today. Mina Kimes, Louis Riddick, and Kimberly Martin here with you for the hour. Coming later, the reason Kyler Murray is under more pressure than Cliff Kingsbury next season. But we begin, everybody, in Seattle with Russell Wilson. And after he made it clear he was unhappy with the Seahawks and may want out, the info came to light that he had four teams he'd be okay being traded to. That'd be Chicago, Vegas, Dallas, and New Orleans. But for now, he'll be in Seattle. Here's what Russ had to say about some of his previous comments.
In terms of the trade talks, I think anytime you play professional sports, there's always a possibility of something happen, right? And I think that's just the reality. I think that there's a lot of teams out there that people were saying that I was going to or would go to. I requested a trade. I did not request a trade. I've always wanted to play here. And the reality is, I think calls were getting thrown around and this and that. And I think that's just a reality. but I think at the end of the day, the real reality is that I'm here and I'm here to win. I'm here to win it all.
All right, so there you go. Russ's smile during that, I think, is telling. Mina Kimes' smile, watching him say all of that, pretty telling. Mina, what do you make of Russ's comments?
I mean, the team's names out there, the teams that Russell Wilson would, I guess, have hypothetically been open to going to, they were out there for a reason. We can parse out who put them out there, who said what to who, but what we do know, and I think I feel comfortable saying this, is that pressure was applied, and at this moment, it's not about whether Russell Wilson wants to leave the Seahawks. He's going to be a Seahawk in 2021. It's about the pressure to win, the pressure to win now, the pressure to force your organization to maximize the roster during your Super Bowl window. And I think that's the question that the Seahawks team is going to face this season. Obviously, it's a question every team faces, but I think more so for Seattle. Did you do everything in your power to appease your quarterback, improve the personnel around him so that they can win now? Because if they don't, I think all of these questions will come back next offseason.
Yeah, look, I think there's no doubt that Russ, what Russ was saying was this. You never heard me say I wanted to be traded.
Right.
Y'all may have said it. My agent may have suggested it, intimated it, said, hey, there's a couple teams that he would play for if you want to trade him, if you happen to want to deal him somewhere else. But I didn't say it because you know what? I mean, look, Russell has to know this. He has to play it on both sides, right? If I get out of here, these are the places I'd like to go. I would like to go if you decide to trade me. If not, I need to also still look in the faces of the other 52 players in this locker room. I still need to have the trust of my offensive line and I have to trust them. I still have to have the trust of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, and they have to trust me. I still have a young guy like Dwayne Eskridge who's coming in here who I'm real excited about, a guy who's a speed burner. So I still may be here, and now that I am here, I need everybody to know that I'm moving forward. But look, everybody in the NFL, they're big boys, they're grown men, they understand how the business works, and they understand for sure, Laura, how the landscape has changed nowadays when it comes to quarterbacks and high-profile players overall. They wield the power now, and they're going to use it when they see fit.
Yeah, and that's why maybe I'm crazy, but listening to Russell, I couldn't help but think of Aaron Rodgers. I couldn't help but think in a couple months, are we going to be listening to Aaron Rodgers say similar things as far as, I always wanted to be here. I love this city. I wanted to finish my career here, but, you know, things kind of snowballed. And, you know, and here's the thing. Louis and Mina touched on it. Star QBs, they're putting their organizations on notice. So whether, even though Russell is back in Seattle and he's happy, he put everybody on notice that there could be a future without me here. As much as he may not have said that, there's been enough talk where now we can envision he's there in 2021, but what about 2022? Same thing with Aaron Rodgers. Maybe he comes back in 2021, but there's a future beyond their current franchises. And now I think all this star QBs from Tom Brady, Rodgers, They all know that there's life beyond where they are right now.
Yeah, they have a lot of power. So what will this actually look like in 2021? Let Russ cook, of course, the Seahawks' offensive mentality. But Wilson's deep ball wasn't exactly great down the stretch. Big reason for their offensive regression, of course. Wilson had an NFL-high 5 touchdowns without a pick on passes 20 yards downfield in the first 5 weeks. We're all talking about him being the MVP, but 4 touchdowns with 4 picks the rest of the way. He was less efficient, too, with a 29% completion rate on such throws from week 6 to 17, which was 29th out of 33 quarterbacks. So, Mina, they got a new offensive coordinator in Shane Waldron there. What is this offense going to look like with him calling plays for Russ?
Well, Laura, Waldron comes from the, you know, ever fruitful Sean McVay coaching tree. It's not going to be a direct copy, however. The personnel at this point are too different, particularly on the offensive line. But I think the hope in Seattle is that Waldron can do what McVay, Shanahan, coaches around the NFL have done with so much success, which is essentially dictated to defenses. Lewis, Kimberly, you know, right now the NFL is basically about, are you on offense dictating to defenses, confusing them, constantly keeping them on tilt, or are defenses doing that to you? Yep. Last year in the second half of the season, defenses did that to Seattle. You saw they played a ton of too high, which took away those explosive plays, and they did not respond. And by the way, they includes Russell Wilson, but it also includes the scheme. Waldron needs to come up with what he basically needs to do is what the Rams do so successfully, which is force defenses to respond to what they're doing by keeping them confused. And if they're able to do that, I think Seattle's offense can hit another gear.
Yeah, no question about that. Listen, I think this offense overall, philosophically, is one that really utilizes formation variation, motion, play action in such a way that it takes a lot of the pressure off of the quarterback in terms of him having to create post-snap, because it's schematically, it's drawn up in such a way that it puts the defenses in such a bind as far as run-pass conflict, as far as making sure that they're pattern matching in the back end once the routes declare in such a way that, you know, their coverage is sound. And the quarterback just has to sit there and read it out. With Russ, as you see, what happens with a lot of times in Seattle's offenses over the years, a lot of times it came down to Russ drop back and make something happen, man. If things aren't open, you got to run around, scramble around, and make things happen. Oh, by the way, you got to do this with an offensive line that, quite honestly, in pass protection, has had some difficulties. I think what he will benefit from is that philosophical difference. And hopefully Shane Waldron, you know, from that perspective, can help him out, which will make him much happier and more inclined to want to stay in Seattle.
Now, overall, there's no secret. The time is now from the urgency that Russ has already pushed and the fact that the entire NFC West, if you look around, just kept getting better and better. New on NFL Live, one of the 4 teams on Wilson's supposed list, the Chicago Bears, have officially signed their rookie quarterback, Justin Fields. Look at him right there, the 11th overall pick from April's draft. All systems go for the Bears mini camp next week. Of course, we'll be all over that right here on NFL Live. We got a lot more coming your way today.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey, it's been a week in Green Bay, right? And this show today is pressure-packed. Let me explain what I mean. We're looking at some of the most fascinating teams around the league, determining which star coach, player, or even front office is shouldering more pressure heading into the 2021 season. Naturally, we begin with the Packers. And you see it, you hear it, the pressure meter. All right, we got Matt LaFleur on one side, we got Jordan Love on the other side. Riddick, start us off. Who is under more pressure, LaFleur or Love?
I guess I am right now to answer after hearing that horn right there. But I'll tell you what, look, I like it, though. I like it. You know what? I think naturally, I think for me, you have to go with Jordan Love simply because of the fact that Matt LaFleur in his first 2 years has proven that he's a big game coach. Now, he's taken the team to 2 consecutive NFC title games and has taken the offense to another level and took Aaron Rodgers to another level. Now, with Jordan Love, remember this, coming out of college, there was some speculation that he shouldn't even have been a first-round pick because of how he struggled a little bit in 2019 for various different reasons when he was still in school. Now, he's supposedly or potentially replacing a living legend, a surefire Hall of Famer. didn't take a single snap last year, never even dressed last year. He's taken more snaps now in minicamp than he took all last year combined. He's taken more snaps already with the first team offense. So he has a lot to live up to. It's not fair to him, but that's what comes with being a first-round pick. That's what comes with following a surefire Hall of Famer. So Jordan's going to be under the spotlight from now on until this situation is resolved.
Yeah, I agree with Lewis. You know, Jordan Love is in a difficult situation off the field with Aaron Rodgers and everything that's happened. The fans, I imagine, won't be thrilled if he's the starter day one. In the same way, by the way, that they weren't thrilled when Aaron Rodgers succeeded Brett Favre. I remember that. But on the field, I actually think it's an excellent situation for the young quarterback compared to some others around the league. You've got a top three offensive line, a top three wide receiver in Devontae Adams, a top three running back in Aaron Jones, a great young tight end in Robert Tonyan, and a very good play caller, as Lewis said, in Matt LaFleur. That is not challenging as far as these things go. And as you said, he was a first-round pick that they did trade up for, so there should be immense pressure on him to live up to that status.
Yeah, it's a clean sweep. It's Jordan Love. Because, guys, picture it. It's week one. It's week two. It's week three. And Jordan Love is on the field. What's the reaction? It's not the celebratory, oh, guys, let's see what the young kids got. It's, oh, no, Green Bay still has a problem. It has an Aaron Rodgers problem. Because if Jordan Love is on the field, that means Aaron Rodgers is away from the facility and not there. And that is ultimately what the organization wants. So unlike, you know, Trevor Lawrence and all these other guys and other teams, Jordan Love on the field is actually not what fans want to see right now because it signals deeper problems within the organization. I agree, he's got a great team, but he's got to prove when he steps on the field that he's ready to replace a living legend when that time does come.
Yeah, you know, Lewis, I realize that LaFleur has been great for the Packers so far, right? But he's also done it in tandem with Aaron Rodgers, leading them to an NFC championship in back-to-back seasons. There's really no pressure in your mind on Matt LaFleur here if this team falls flat on their face without their quarterback?
Now, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't say that there's no pressure. I guess I'm saying that there's just significantly more on Jordan. There's no question that Matt LaFleur has a huge responsibility now. Because remember, if you remember the night that they drafted Jordan Love, he was as fired up as anyone. He was high-fiving people, too, which leads you to believe that, look, he knew that this was a guy that the organization liked, that he liked. They hired him for his play calling. They hired him for his ability to nurture and develop young players on the offensive side of the ball, particularly quarterback. So now his credentials are going to be called, not called into question, but they're going to be scrutinized too, Laura. Yeah. Look, a lot of people would say, well, what did you have to teach Aaron Rodgers? I mean, come on. You don't have to teach him anything besides, hey, what do you like? You want to throw it or run it? Although he didn't listen to him, quite honestly, in the NFC Championship game. But sure, there's going to be some pressure on him, no doubt.
Yeah, it's an interesting different side of LaFleur's brain that would have to be exercised as opposed to what he's been doing with Aaron Rodgers. All right, elsewhere in the NFC, let's get the pressure cooker going again. Who's under more pressure with the Saints, Sean Payton or Jameis Winston? Lewis, you get the first crack again.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Sean Payton here. Look, this is the quarterback whisperer. This is a guy who undoubtedly, and I think unquestionably, is one of the best play callers that this game has seen over the past 10 to 12 years. And him and Drew Brees have had a tremendous amount of success in a long, successful relationship. Now, going forward, what do they do here at the quarterback position? Is it Jameis? Is it Taysom Hill, who Sean keeps saying could be a starting quarterback? Whoever plays quarterback here, it's nowhere but up for them. They don't have pressure. This is on Sean.
Kimberly, more pressure for the Patriots, Bill Belichick or Cam Newton?
I love that sound. Laura, I'll be honest, I hesitated at first because I thought, oh, if the Patriots struggle, what are we really saying about Bill? And then I came to my senses because in 2022, who's going to be the head coach? Bill Belichick. Who's the heir apparent as far as the franchise goes? It's Mac Jones. So Cam Newton, if he struggles this year, if this team is not good, what is his future in the NFL? That remains to be seen.
Yeah, it's interesting. For a Julio-less Falcons team, Mina, who's under more pressure, Arthur Smith or Matt Ryan?
I think it's Matt Ryan, Laura, in large part because of what Atlanta didn't do, which was draft a rookie quarterback. In fact, they restructured Matt Ryan's contract, basically tying him into the franchise for a longer period of time. Did they make his job easier by trading Julio Jones? Absolutely not, though they did draft Kyle Pitt. But they did say, you are our guy. We are betting on you and that your career can, you know, rebound in effect under Arthur Smith. And I think Matt's going to feel the heat.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Oh, yeah, Matt Stafford preparing for a huge chance in his career. You want to compete for a Super Bowl? This may be your best chance, Matt, with a stacked Rams roster and a coach who really wanted you. Speaking of that coach, here's what Sean McVay had to say about his vibe now that Stafford's out there at camp and in town in L.A.
Everybody says, man, you just seem like you're in a better mood this offseason. I said, you're damn right I am. So this guy, he's a special guy. I think one of the best ways that I could describe him, when you hear people that have been around him, there's a known confidence where when he walks into a room, you always feel his presence, but he's got a great humility about himself that everybody loves being around him.
All right, so that was yesterday, and then all the headlines started coming out, like maybe this was a shot at somebody else, hint, hint, Jared Goff. So Sean McVay wanted to clarify that. This is after practice with the latest on what he meant by the good mood.
I have been in a good mood because of the confidence I have in this team, but by no means is that a slight to anybody, you know, like Jared, who has done a phenomenal job for the last 4 years here. You know, I hated that I even have to address that, but I do think out of respect for him and all the good things he's done, I am in a good mood, but that doesn't mean it's not because we're working together or because of just Stafford exclusively. There's a lot of good things going on that I feel really good about and I'm confident about.
Okay, Jared Goff's over there like, all right, I'm going to prove you wrong. Lindsay Theory covers the Rams for us. Lindsay, you've been around the team all week. What exactly is the mood right now in L.A.?
Laura, despite that brief moment of frustration that you saw, Sean McVay has seemingly been in a very good mood throughout the offseason program and for several reasons. First, McVay is huge on interpersonal communication and has said many times how great it's been to communicate with players and even the media without masks. Second, the addition of defensive coordinator Raheem Morris has provided an absolute spark. McVay and Morris have a long-standing relationship, and the two have spent plenty of practice time jabbing at each other as they call in plays from opposite sides of the football. And finally, it's all about Matthew Stafford. McVay has raved about his new quarterback's leadership, presence, and football savvy. McVay saying that things come to Stafford quickly and that overall, he's done outstanding. Laura.
Thanks, Lindsay. All eyes will be on McVay and Stafford. Which of these two is under more pressure this fall? Mina, the pressure cooker is alive. Let's start with you.
Well, first I'd like to say, in Sean McVay's defense, I think many of us are in a better mood this summer than we were this time last year. I actually would have gone with that excuse if I was him, but I don't think he meant it as a slight. I think he was telling the truth. And the reality is, if you polled, I don't know, 100 people around the NFL, 99 of them would pin the struggles of the Rams offense on Jared Goff, not Sean McVay, and that other one person might be Jared Goff. And I agree with them. Like, watching them, I think Jared Goff wasn't as bad as has been portrayed. He had some good performances, even in the postseason, but you did see him struggling under pressure. You saw him having difficulty creating, as he has throughout his career, frankly, and then creating explosive plays, throwing downfield. Now, in Matthew Stafford, Sean McVay got precisely the quarterback he wanted, which is the quarterback who can do all of those things, create on his own, outside of the structure of the offense, throw the ball downfield. This is everything Sean McVay wanted, and now, as a result, the pressure is on Sean McVay to execute. I think if he doesn't, there will be questions. Okay, this is the quarterback you wanted? Boy genius, as he used to be called? Like, where's the success? I think the Rams' offense will be successful, but I do think they're under a lot of pressure to be that.
Yeah, I agree with you in many respects as far as the pressure being on Sean because of the fact that he's pulling the trigger as far as the personnel moves out there, and he is the guy who supposedly has totally revamped all of offensive football for a while there, and I have great respect for him. But I would say this. Look, Matthew Stafford's the former number one overall pick in 2009 of the Detroit Lions, and quite honestly, he has always had problems living up to the expectations that people have put on him, despite the fact that Detroit didn't do the greatest job of surrounding him with support, with the supporting cast in terms of a running game, consistent weaponry, consistent protection, complementary defense, to say the least. But this is a guy who looked. What he did do at Detroit was this, okay? Of the 9 seasons that he played 16 games, that he started 16 games, this guy threw for 4,000 yards in every one of those seasons except one. 9 seasons. One season, he threw for 5,000 yards. 2012, he threw the ball 727 times. So what did you, I mean, clearly they were saying, Matthew Stafford, we're going to live and die with you. And he just, it's impossible to do that. But coming out here to L.A., now people are saying, now you've got Sean McVay. Now you've got a run-centric offense that builds the passing game off of it. Now you're going to a play caller who can set you up in ways where you don't have to do much besides hit the open guy. And you have a complementary defense that can help you out as well. So for Matthew, it's going to be about, okay, so Detroit didn't help you? Well, now you've got all the help. Now you better win. So it's on him.
Yes, one of the best defenses in the NFL. Lewis, I think this might be the true 50-50 split as far as who's under more pressure, because what I said about Stafford, McVay, everyone blamed Jared Goff. With Matt Stafford, everyone blamed the Detroit Lions. Now, together, they're kind of out of excuses, and suddenly they're both under a lot of pressure to meet the lofty expectations that have been placed upon them.
Yeah, to both of your points, the defense will not be an excuse for the Rams. In fact, last year, first in defensive efficiency, they are unbelievable. Let's rip through a couple of other situations. Lewis, more pressure on McVay's former quarterback, Jared Goff, or his new head coach, Dan Campbell, in Detroit?
This is an easy one. This is all on Jared Goff, because I'll tell you what. Look at Dan Campbell. Does Dan Campbell look like a guy right now who's feeling any pressure anytime he speaks to the media? This guy's just having fun. He's playing with house money every day. He's just like, hey, I'm happy to be here. Jared Goff, on the other hand, this is a guy who, when you look at his career path, this is a guy who gets drafted number one overall. People think that you should run him off to Canada. Then Sean saves his career. Then Sean says, you know what? I can't do anything else for you. I'm sending you to Detroit. So this is a guy who has a lot of pressure to go ahead and justify Detroit trading for him.
Mina, what about John Gruden entering year 4 of his 10-year deal, or his quarterback Derek Carr? Who's under more pressure?
Well, so I think the reality is, Laura, it's Derek Carr who seems to be the subject of trade rumors every year. The Raiders are going to move on from him. I think it should be John Gruden, because the problem with this Raiders team over the last few years since Derek Carr was extended is the defense. And yes, I know John Gruden's an offensive coach, but he's also the head coach of this football team. Fix the defense, Las Vegas. Derek Carr is not the problem with this football team.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kyler Murray inserted himself in the MVP talk early on last year. He did damage with his legs, regardless of position. Lamar Jackson is the only player who averaged more yards per rush than Murray last season. But Murray didn't rely on design runs as often, starting with week 11 against the Seahawks, perhaps due to a shoulder injury he suffered weeks earlier. Murray said Thursday his legs should not be the centerpiece of the Cardinals' offense.
You know, my legs should be a luxury, and it kind of wasn't like that last year. It was kind of me having to run for us. Once, you know, I was, you know, my shoulder was banged up or whatever, and I wasn't trying to put myself out there and take those hits and stuff like that. We kind of took a law, you know, hit a law. Honestly, I think it was good for us. You know, I think it was a lesson for us that, you know, we can't be one-dimensional.
You know, as you hear him say that, you think, is that a messaging that's coming from Kyler himself, or is Kingsbury involved in that? It's kind of a little interesting there, him dictating Kyler what the offense should look like. But, Lewis, is Kyler right that his run game should be a luxury for them?
Yeah, Laura, I agree. And I agree in the interest of longevity and preserving him for the long haul. Look, when you draft a guy number one overall, you don't want him to have a short-lived career. You don't want him to have to wind up taking a shot and getting caught in a bad situation because you're exposing him to those hits to where you shorten his career and or you don't have him available for 16 games, or he can't throw the football the way you need him to because he took a shot on his throwing shoulder because you exposed him too much. I'm not saying to cut it out totally. Whenever it's strategically to your advantage to do so, and he drops back to pass and has to create, fine. But I think as a steady diet, I think with a guy with his body type and with the way that I know defenders are hunting quarterbacks, I would just want to make sure that it is something that we're very, very judicious with and let him go ahead and prove himself as a thrower, which I think all quarterbacks want to do anyway.
I have mixed feelings about this because I hear everything Lewis is saying about longevity, and I do suspect that Kyler wanting to cut down on the rushing or at least not have it be the centerpiece of the offense is as much about perception as it is about longevity, not wanting to be seen as a run-first quarterback. But his rushing ability is so special. Like, him and Lamar Jackson are really on a tier of their own when it comes to rushing quarterbacks, and he actually ranks above Lamar, or ranked above him in yards before contact per rush, which speaks to how explosive and elusive he is with the ball in his hands. To me, Kyler's running was not the problem with this offense. The problem was the fact that his passing, in particular his intermediate passing, did not develop last season as I think people hoped it would and should benefit from the threat of his rushing. Some of that is on Kyler. Some of it, I believe, is on Cliff Kingsbury and also the personnel around him. And that part of the offense, that part of his game, needs to develop as well if he wants to truly be an elite quarterback. But, you know, rushing should not be a dirty word in the NFL because you don't want to stop running just because you want to be seen a certain way. It is what makes Kyler Murray so remarkable.
Yeah, the game has changed in that way as well, too. I mean, that's what these teams want. They want these quarterbacks that can add that level of uncertainty to a defense to have to defend. All right, so let's continue the theme of the day. Mina, who has more pressure on them to win this season? Here comes the noise, Mina. Kyler or his head coach, Cliff Kingsbury?
I think it's Cliff Kingsbury, Laura. You know, he was a surprising hire in a lot of ways, given his college track record. And while this offense did take a leap forward in Kyler's first year, it sort of stagnated last season. I have criticized some of his in-game decision-making, situational football underneath him. And I think this offense really needs to progress, especially with the addition of A.J. Green and Rodney Hudson, in order to justify him continuing to be the head coach of the Cardinals.
Yeah, I'm going to take the opposite side of this and say that more pressure is on Kyler. With this being his third season and with expectations being as high as they are, given some of the additions that they've made both offensively and defensively, I think it's going to be incumbent and important for Kyler to take the next step, not just on the football field, not just on some of the passing shortcomings that Mina alluded to as far as intermediate, you know, passing efficiency, but in particular, his grasp of this entire team. And I don't mean grasp X and O, I mean grasp leadership, respect, having guys follow him, elevating everyone else's play, putting this team on his shoulders because he is the quarterback. He is the number one overall pick. He is a very, very unique individual in terms of his dual threat ability. So when you have that kind of ability that comes along with being drafted number one overall, naturally, you have to be willing to accept the responsibility of being the face of the franchise. So I think for him, given what the expectations are of him, and for this football team, given where they are as far as their program build and the division that they're in, he's under a ton of pressure to deliver for this team because it's a toss-up as far as who's going to win the West this year. It really is. You can make a case for all four teams, and he's going to be the difference for their team, whether they win it or not.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of these star quarterbacks, it's just expected that they would have more of an extrovert personality. Kyler Murray is an introvert. He'd probably say that about himself, and it affects how he would navigate a locker room. Mina, you just heard what Lewis said about the NFC West. Is it a toss-up for you, too? If I nail you down right now, who's winning the West?
Right now I've got the Rams, Laura, but I truly believe, I agree with Lewis, I think these teams could finish in any order. honestly, and I would not be surprised. It is the hardest division in football. All four of these teams are playoff caliber.
Yeah, okay. We mentioned Kyler has a unique skill set. He's also very good at baseball. We thought he kind of hung up the baseball cleats, but he said this, and you just got to listen to it.
Yeah, I know everybody around, like around here probably, you know, feels different about it. But, I mean, me personally, like, I play the game my whole life. Like, if I ever had the opportunity, for sure, like, I would definitely go for it. Like, that's – what are we talking about? And I'm sure anybody else asking me would, too. So, I don't know. I'm not trying to start anything. I'm just talking.
Uh-oh, you started something, though. Lewis, you're the GM in Arizona. What's the conversation between you and Kyler today?
Laura, there ain't no conversation. You know what? Let me change that. There's a conversation. First, there's a text. Kyler, let me holler at you, Kyler. Let me holler at you. Where can we meet? Okay? That's the first thing. Number two, it's going to be like, Kyler, listen to me. Listen to me carefully. You are a quarterback. You are our quarterback. We're doing everything we can to help take you to the promised land individually and for this football team. Enough of that baseball stuff, man. I mean, come on now. Come on. Just pour yourself into this football team. We drafted you number one overall the year after drafting a quarterback in the first round the year before.
Yeah.
So come on now. Come on.
Hey.
We're done with that.
Mina, did you like how with the little smirk, he's like, I'm not trying to start something, but, you know, kind
of
did.
Oh, yeah, that is the story of the offseason with these quarterbacks. I'm not trying to start anything. But, listen, you know, it is another way. If you're tired of taking hits, you can go play baseball, man.
Yeah, I don't know. Someone slides into you second or somewhere in the middle infield, you might take a hit there. Julio Jones doesn't have to be a practice for Tennessee, but as our Diana Rossini reported yesterday, he wanted to show up voluntarily to get the feel for the new culture of his new team. And if you listen to what he said lately about those doubting his health, it feels like he's ready to go off in a big way. As for stats, well, take a listen.
My whole career, I've never been a stat guy. You know, previous years, everybody always asking me, what you thinking you're going to do? What's your prediction? You know, things like that. I've never been a stat guy. I'm a team guy. I'm just excited to be a part of the organization. Whatever they need from me to do, you know, I'm willing to do it and play my role and play it at a high level.
Julio, I hate to break it to you, but you kind of are a stat guy because your numbers are among the best for any receiver in NFL history. Julio's put up over 10,000 yards since 2014, the second most in a seven-year span all time, trailing only Hall of Famer Jerry Rice. And on a per-game basis, he's averaging the most receiving yards in league history, with Calvin Johnson and Antonio Brown ranking second and third on that list. All right, so let's get the pressure cooker going. Lewis, will there be more pressure on Julio to change his expectations and fit into this run-first offense, or Ryan Tannehill to try to make sure Julio gets his touches every game?
Yeah, Laura, I think you articulated that perfectly. There's more pressure on Julio because of the fact that his expectations, or rather what he is used to, is not going to be what is the case in Tennessee. So the pressure is going to be on for him to produce with much less opportunity to produce. Look, in Atlanta, on average, you say over the past 2 to 3 seasons, and even in some of his best seasons, he would get double digit targets upwards of 45-50% of the games. Last year, you know how many times A.J. Brown was targeted double digits in 16 games? Once. One time, because that's how this offense is set up. It's a run-centric offense. Now, they try to push the ball down the field and they want to produce explosive plays, but they're just not a high-volume passing team. So I think the pressure is going to be on Julio to, one, you know, kind of alter his expectations, two, be okay with that as they go through a full 16-game season and produce when the moments come for him to produce. I don't have any question that he'll be able to, because this is one of my favorite people now. This guy is the very definition of an alpha. It's all over him. It just pours out of him that he's an alpha. But I think the pressure will be on him because people are going to be expecting every time he touches the ball for it to be 6 every single time.
People describe me that way too, Liz, that alpha. I'm alpha. It just pours out of me. So I'm used to hearing that as well. I got to say, I think it's Tannehill. So the last time we saw the Titans was against the Ravens in the playoffs. Lewis Riddick was there calling the game, and you remember what happened, which is Derrick Henry got stopped. He ended up averaging 2.2 yards per carry, largely because the Ravens played a lot of single high safety, used their numbers advantage in the box to stop Henry and force Tannehill, challenged him really to throw it outside, and they weren't able to. And adding Julio Jones to the equation, it changes that math. It opens things up for A.J. Brown, for new play caller Todd Downing, and more importantly for Ryan Tannehill. Like, Ryan Tannehill now arguably has the best 1-2 punch at wide receiver in the NFL. Mm. If you can't produce with those skill players, people are going to be looking at you. And also, you mentioned that the Titans were a run-heavy team, and certainly that's been their identity with Henry. It was under Arthur Smith and with Jonnu Smith, tight end, who's gone now. That identity might change a little bit. I'll be very curious to watch this team early on and see if they go a little bit more pass-heavy, because they certainly have the weapons to do so.
Yeah, Laura, to me, it's simple. It's Ryan Tannehill. Because, Laura, you read those stats before. Julio's at the top of the list. We know what Julio Jones is. Ryan Tannehill, to me, it's like you've got everything you want. Like, Julio's straight. He's going to get paid. He's a team-first guy, like he said, but he's on a team that he wants to be on. He wanted to leave Atlanta. He's got it all right now. Ryan Tannehill, he's got the weapons. He's got to show that, you know, this is a team. I can be the leader of this team, and we may be run heavy. It may be all about Derrick Henry, but other teams know that you stop Derrick Henry first. That's the goal. Force Tannehill to beat you. So that's why I say it's all on Ryan Tannehill as far as answering those questions, answering the doubts. We know what Julio Jones is when healthy. We know what he is. But if the Titans expect to go deep in the playoffs like they think they can, then it's got to be on Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, Lewis, Kimberly just said a key phrase, when healthy. And, you know, Julio's really bristled this week when people have talked about his health. He's like, Listen, I'm 32 years old. I'm not old, okay? Maybe in football terms, some people would say, but he doesn't feel old, you know? When you think about the way that he could be used in this offense and the fact that he may not be the only guy or the number one guy, knowing that he can split a little bit with A.J. Brown, you think that actually ends up helping his health a little bit, not being targeted as much, not being the guy that has to run all these routes all the time, even if he's not catching the ball?
Yeah, no question. Look, I think a lot of the burden will be off of him, although when you're Julio Jones, I think naturally you come with, you know, the responsibility of producing big plays and especially producing them in big moments. I don't care what A.J. Brown has done, and I love A.J. Brown. He's not Julio. So, yeah. But I do think that he will be able to kind of spread the responsibility of having to make big plays in timely moments amongst all these wonderful playmakers that they have. And you're right. That should take some of the pressure off of him. I'm sure Mike Vrabel will protect him, you know, as far as during the week, just like they did in Atlanta. And Julio's right. He's 32. We get so conditioned into thinking 32 is like 72, 82. You know, it's like he'll be okay. He'll be all right.
Yeah, I'm 32. I'm like, golly, everyone's talking about that like it's such an old fart.